Hello, this is Dee reading the Vermilion County News for September 28th. We'll begin our reading with the front page article entitled Early Voting Sees a Busy Start by Jennifer Bailey. Danville resident Bruce Schofield was an early voter for the November 3rd election on Friday. "I wanted to make certain that I voted," Schofield said. "I'm well. I'd hate to be cheated out of it. It's important to vote," he added. It was a busy start to early voting on Thursday and Friday in the city and county. According to Sandy Delhay, executive director of the Danville Election Commission, they saw 170 voters on the first day of early voting on Thursday. Delhay said they prepared for a large number of people. "There are signs for where voters should line up and marks on the floor for social distancing." Election judges are wearing masks or face shields, and a clear partition has been installed in the Danville Election Commission office to separate staff and the public at the counter. "We're moving them through pretty quickly." "A lot has changed," Delhay said, "about this election." Delhay said they hired 4 additional staff to help in the election office. "We're still struggling somewhat," she said, "about having enough election judges on election day." Since it's a holiday, she's also reaching out to any teachers and high school students who possibly would like to help. In addition to early voting, the Danville Election Commission also started mailing about 1,700 vote-by-mail ballots. The office also has received an online ballot request. "These are for people out of the country, such as service members." "I wouldn't wait," Delhay said about early voting. She said a person's health could change, weather on election day is unknown, and people can come to the office on weekdays and also the last 4 Saturdays before the election, and starting October 10th from 9 a.m. to noon to vote early. According to Vermilion County Chief Deputy County Clerk and Supervisor of Elections Lindsay Light, the county had 153 early voters during the first day of early voting on Thursday, with the numbers continuing to climb. The county clerk's office also had mailed just shy of 2,800 ballots. "We continue to receive more vote-by-mail applications daily, so that number is guaranteed to continue to increase," according to Light. Both the city and county offices are located in the Vermilion County Administration Building, 201 North Vermilion Street. Early voting hours can be found at www.vercounty.org for the county and on the Danville Election Commission's website at danvillevotes.com. There also still will be normal polling locations on Election Day for those who choose to cast their vote on November 3rd, Election Day. "We're going to accommodate the voter by any means possible to ensure everyone is guaranteed their vote in the general election, whether that means they come see us in person or they utilize the vote-by-mail postcard. No matter which way the voter chooses to vote, our office is working diligently to protect the integrity of the voting process, as always," stated Light. Another front-page article is entitled, "Going the Distance, Local Cycler Races Against Childhood Cancer," by Marvin Holman, Danville. In 2018, Neil Ehrlich took the Great Cycle Challenge USA and did not complete it. This year, Ehrlich is going the distance with the challenge. He has 2 major reasons to do so. Danville's Ehrlich is in the midst of cycling 200 miles this month to raise money for the Children's Cancer Research Fund in the names of local children Aaron Cox and Lincoln Downing, who are dealing with childhood cancer. The challenge is part of a year in which Ehrlich has returned to cycling after taking 2019 off. "I choose not to do it again in 2019 because I wasn't into cycling. But 2020 came, and when COVID hit, my wife, Melody, and I started to ride again as a way to release and get out of the house." Ehrlich said, "I started riding again, and the GCC email came in, and I said, I'll pledge 200 miles and $1,500. At that time, I knew two kids, Aaron Cox and Lincoln Downing, that have cancer. I grew up with one of the grandfathers of Lincoln, and I knew the Cox family, so I put them down, even though I don't know the kids that well. Within 24 hours, I was at $1,400, so I raised it to $2,500, and that came and went. So now I am just under $4,000, and it is not the money, because we all have goals, but it's about the kids. Aaron and Lincoln both were diagnosed with cancer late last year, and both kids have taken long trips to Peoria and later Chicago for treatment. She was diagnosed on New Year's Eve for osteosarcoma, a solid tumor on her left femur bone, said Aaron's mother, Lisa Cox. The course of treatment was chemotherapy and then a surgery to remove the tumor from the bone. She had the operation in April, and she's rocking through things out now. She is 9, and she amazes us. She is near the end of her chemotherapy, and it's nice to see some light at the end of the tunnel. He was diagnosed in December around Christmas time with neuroblastoma, and it starts on your adrenal gland, said Jordan Downing, Lincoln's father. We've been away from our families by going to Peoria first and now Chicago. It's common, and my brother actually had it, so I knew what to expect, but as a parent, you experience it differently. The support from Ehrlich is just one of many good things parents of both kids say has come as far as support. It's amazing. We learned this year that it takes a community of support because it is continuous and ongoing, Lisa Cox said. There have been many ways people have shown their love and kindness. So when Neil started doing this in honor of Aaron and Lincoln, it makes you feel so good that there are people that are fighting with you as much as they can. He's had some meaningful rides and lets us know about them, and it's great to see someone that has. I was a little surprised at first. It's been amazing that people are willing to help us, Jordan Downing said. I hadn't seen Neil or his daughter in 20 years, so it's been nice that people that you never thought were thinking about you would just come out and do this. His daughter came around and brought us some snacks. It was a nice surprise. Ehrlich started cycling again earlier this year in Florida. When he and his wife returned to Illinois, the process continued. Instead of doing 5 miles, I was doing 10 miles and up to 20 when I was in Florida. Ehrlich said, you come up to Illinois, there are more hills, so it took a while to get back up to dealing with that. It's still difficult because of the hills. It's a good exercise for a 70-year-old. I like riding in the country, but if it's windy, it can be tough. One of the nicest rides was near State Line, Indiana, and if you go east, you can see a nice, winding, paved road. I try to do a lot around my house, and then I go to Jackson Street and Douglas Park and across on South Street. You see people, and they give you a lot of credit for doing it. At this point, Ehrlich is at 149 miles and is determined to meet his goal. It would mean a lot to get it this year, and I want to do it for the kids, Ehrlich said. It's been my nature to help people and make them feel better, and that's why I do it. The families have been absolutely wonderful. They are appreciative because what they are going through is difficult on everyone, and both of them have to go to hospitals in Chicago, and they spend a week or 10 days up there. These kids are fabulous, and they don't complain, so they're troopers. As for the families, the support of the community has made the past few months bearable as the children continue the fight. It was a commitment that he was going to make for Aaron and Lincoln, and that means a lot, because it can be lonely and isolating, especially this year with COVID on top of it all. Lisa Cox said, when you can't be there physically, people are still there with you, especially during something like this. I encourage people to do things like Neil has done to bring awareness to childhood cancer, Jordan Downing said. We have benefited a lot from St. Jude in their research because of the donations. People don't think about it until it happens to them. I like to thank everybody locally who has reached out to us. A lot of people from high school and Danville and Catlin have come out to help us and have been there for us. The Great Cycle Challenge is in its fifth year, and over 230,000 riders from 50 states have ridden 18 million miles and raised more than $24 million for research and development of better treatments and cures for childhood cancer. The next front page article is entitled, Lieutenant Governor Visits Danville for Last Census Push, by Jennifer Bailey. With Danville at only a 60% response rate for the 2020 census and Vermilion County at 65.6%, both lower than the 2010 census, Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton visited Danville today for a final census push. Stratton attended a census event outside on the Hegler stage at the Danville Public Library, which included Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr., Library Executive Director Jennifer Hess, and Statewide Census Director Mayor Ashanta Wilkerson. "Although we're doing good, we can do better," Wilkerson said, adding that they have to make sure every community is fully counted in the census. "We all lose," she said, "when communities and neighborhoods aren't counted." She said there remains 563,000 uncounted people in Illinois. Hess said the library relies on a per capita grant, which was $41,000 this year, based on the census population for the city. The funding supplements the library's collection development of books and materials. Wilkerson asked residents to ask five people you know to complete the census. They can go to the library for help in filling out the census, mail back the questionnaire they received, call or go online at 2020census.gov. Danville is a city with character. It has breathtaking outdoor parks and wildlife that includes more than 1 mile of scenic trails for biking and running, Stratton said. "That excites me, for some of you may not know that I'm an avid biker and runner." Danville also has a thriving arts community with galleries, theaters, and museums. "We all want Danville to maintain its unique character. One way to ensure that is by completing the 2020 census," she said. "The census is directly tied to millions of dollars in federal funds. Just a 1% undercount equals $195 million in lost funding for the state and communities. That's money that Illinois cannot afford to lose, money that helps Vermilion County and cities like Danville," Stratton said. "It's funding for roads and transportation, for lunch programs in our schools, healthcare subsidies for our veterans, summer jobs for our kids, support for neighborhood businesses, and more." Stratton continued that the census is more than a document. It is a vote in government. The census count determines how districts are drawn and ensures that there's an equal representation. "An undercount will impact the number of people we're allowed to have to represent us in Congress. And, as you all know, Illinois needs strong voices in Washington to advocate for federal funding that supports our state, our cities, and our neighborhoods." She said, "But there's the thing. We are in the middle of a count crisis. The state of Illinois has a 70% self-response rate. But Danville is at a 60% self-response rate and is well below the national average," Stratton said. Many Danville residents are members of what we call hard-to-count communities. That includes the elderly, those in rural areas, individuals who are housing insecure, and individuals with mental and/or physical disabilities. "Each of them deserve to be heard and seen and counted," she said. "Like every other resident of Danville, each deserves the resources and representation they are due. I know there's nothing too hard for Danville, and we're asking you to roll up your sleeves and go to work. Fill out the census. Tell your families, friends, church members, neighbors, and co-workers." She said time is running out, and with a September 30th deadline, we have less than 1 week to make it count and ensure that millions of dollars in federal funds come to Danville and Vermilion County. Our next article is entitled DAC Board Approves Budget by Jennifer Bailey. The Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees on Thursday approved the college's new fiscal year 2021 budget. The operating budget is $17.16 million, an increase of about 0.3% compared to last year's budget of $17.1 million. The budget is balanced and reflects that the college doesn't expect to receive state funding at 100%. With an expected increase of more than $100,000 in operating and state formula equalization grants, as well as continued increases in local property taxes, as a result of an increasing equalized assessment valuation, the college will be able to move forward by investing in human resources to maintain quality student service, provide training needed to meet the employment demands of the community, provide training needed for assessment of student learning outcomes, cover software increases for certain programs, and add new student mobile app software. Depending on the fluctuation in the EAV, the tax levy rate is anticipated to be approximately 60.86 cents. The current rate is 61.15 cents. In other business, the board approved a $158,856 annual agreement for 5 years with Ellucian Cloud Services to store computer data. The annual cost will be offset by about $60,000 the first year and about $68,000 in years 2 through 5 by not hiring an additional staff member and other maintenance service and backup costs. The college would avoid having to purchase a new server. There also is a one-time implementation fee of $115,000. DAC President Stephen Nacko said there's a management information system that stores everything and keeps us as a college, including student and employee information. There's a backup server, and as these systems have been hacked, Nacko said this is a great firewall. Also, leasing 2 15-passenger minibuses for $981 per minibus per month from Midwest Transit Equipment, Kankakee. Purchasing a semi-truck driving simulator for $49,900 from Doron Precision Systems, Binghamton, New York, to replace an outdated one that is beyond repair. A notice of filing petitions for the April 6, 2021 election of 2 board members to serve 6-year terms. Nominating petitions, which can be picked up in the board secretary's office, can be filed by interested candidates from December 14th to the 21st. The organizational meeting after the election will be May 4th, 2021. Changing the 5:30 p.m. November 19th board meeting, which was scheduled at the DAC Hoopston Higher Learning Center, to take place at DAC Vermilion Hall, room 302, due to social distancing needs. And we'll now turn to obituaries. The first is for Odette Leona Andre Halcom, went to be with the Lord on September 7, 2020. A celebration of life will take place in the future at Sunset Funeral Home in Danville. In lieu of flowers, a donation to the Alzheimer Foundation would be much appreciated. Josephine Anita Swan, 97, of Danville, passed away at 7 a.m. on September 25th at Hawthorne Inn in Danville. A private family celebration of life service will be held at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Pastor Mike Chilson will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society in Josephine's memory. Diana L. Hanthorn, age 59, of rural Williamsport, passed away Monday evening, September 21, 2020. Her family will greet guests from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, September 28, at the Williamsport Christian Church. A nursing honor guard service preceded her memorial service at 11 a.m. will precede her memorial funeral service at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, September 29th, at the church, with Pastor Jesse Stoner officiating. The family prefers memorial contributions be directed to St. Jude Children's Hospital, with envelopes available at the services. Helen Dahlenberg, 92, of Danville, passed away at 5:30 a.m. on September 22nd at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of life service will be held on Wednesday, September 30th at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time at St. James Lutheran Church in Reynolds, Indiana, 110 North Kenton, Reynolds, Indiana. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at the church. Reverend Keller and Reverend Blakey will officiate. Burial will be in St. James Lutheran Cemetery, Reynolds, Indiana. The family is being assisted by Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Memorials may be made to the St. James Lutheran Church in Reynolds, Indiana. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of the visitation or service wear a mask and practice social distancing. Mrs. Marie Samuelowitz died on September 22, 2020. A visitation was held on Monday from 10:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Flanner Buckman Zionsville in Zionsville, Indiana. A funeral service followed at noon. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions can be made to Toys for Tots. Contributions can be mailed to Marine Toys for Tots Foundation, Gift Processing Administrator, 18251 Quantico Gateway Drive, Triangle, Virginia, 22172. Or by going to toysfortots.org. Marvin E. Davis passed away at 10:35 on September 23rd at home. Per Marvin's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded with no service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Danville VA Decedent Affairs, 1900 East Main Street, Danville, or OSF Sacred Hearts Cancer Center, 806 North Logan Avenue, Danville, or Four Paws Thrift Shop, 1225 North Collette Street, Danville. Elizabeth Ruth Schuring, 77, of Danville, passed away at 4 a.m. on September 22, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of life service will be held on Wednesday, September 30, 2020, at 11 a.m. at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 1930 North Bowman Avenue, Danville. Reverend Phil Callahan will officiate. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. at the church. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Memorials may be made to the Emmanuel Lutheran Church. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of the visitation or service wear a mask and practice social distancing. And now I'll return to reading some articles. This one is entitled Petitions Available to Seek Election to the Danville City Council by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. At least one alderman may not seek re-election to the Danville City Council next year. I'm considering not running, said Ward 7 Alderman Steve Foster. Foster has served on the City Council for 28 years. He said he knows of a couple other people who may run, and he thinks he's done about all he can do on the council. Petition packets for candidates who want to run for a seat on the Danville City Council in the April 6, 2021 consolidated election are now available at the Danville Election Commission office, 201 North Vermilion Street. Office hours are 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., Monday through Friday. The primary election, if needed next year, to narrow down several candidates running in one ward would be February 23rd. 7 alderman positions in the city, one in each of the 7 wards, will be up for election. Petitions must be filed with Danville Election Commission from November 16th to the 23rd, with the required signatures of registered voters, which differ by ward based on the last election. Seats up for election are Ward 1, Alderman Robert Williams; Ward 2, Alderman Dan Duncan; Ward 3, Alderman R. J. Davis; Ward 4, Alderwoman Sharon McMahon; Ward 5, Alderman Mike Poor; Ward 6, Alderman James Poshard; and Ward 7, Alderman Foster Williams, was appointed as a Ward 1 Alderman last year to fill Ricky Williams Jr.'s remaining term when he was elected mayor. Davis, Poor, and Poshard have already picked up petition packets, while Williams and Duncan also said they plan to run. McMahon could not be reached for comment. Others who have picked up petitions to possibly run are Tricia Teague, which Election Commission's paperwork didn't list which ward, and also Damara Joyner in Ward 3. Our next article is entitled, "Pritzker Announces a $140 million in Grants to Health Centers" by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Federally qualified health centers in Illinois and other health facilities that have been on the front lines in the state's battle against COVID-19 are in line to receive $140 million in grants to help them maintain operations. Governor J.B. Pritzker made that announcement Friday during a news conference at one such clinic, the Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago. "Our state is among the best in class when it comes to fighting COVID-19 because we've put people first, and our health care providers have had a key role in making that possible," Pritzker said. "But for many providers, that work has come at a significant financial cost, from maintaining payroll to spending extra on personal protective equipment to taking extra precautions in ambulance services for COVID-positive individuals. In short, we're giving direct dollars to our direct responders," he added. Federally qualified health centers, or FQHCs, have accounted for a large part of the state's COVID-19 testing program, where tests are available free of charge, regardless of a person's ability to pay or citizenship status. In addition to FQHCs, Pritzker said grants will also go to safety net hospitals and long-term care facilities. In addition, he said, the state plans to launch a web portal next week to allow smaller healthcare providers to apply for funding. David Ernesto Munar, president and CEO of Howard Brown Health, said that health centers saw a 70% drop in its in-person visits due to the stay-at-home order that was in place during the early months of the pandemic. And while he said that was necessary to control the spread of the disease, it cut deeply into the clinic's regular revenue stream, although some of the loss was offset by a state rule that allowed them to bill for telehealth services. Funding for the grants comes from aid the state has received through the Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act, which Congress passed in March. Teresa Eagleson, director of the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, said the delay in disbursing the money was due largely to the need to comply with federal restrictions on how the money is used. She also noted that 60% of the money will be targeted in areas that have been disproportionately affected by the coronavirus pandemic. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for September 28th. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.